The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we'll start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, Emergency Measures. The effects of the pandemic are stirring up a potential fiscal catastrophe for hospitals. And the cover story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with a second headline, Dwindling Margins. Labor costs, supply chain issues force hospitals to seek new fiscal treatment. And this is written by Zach Ezone. An ominous trend is emerging that eventually could change the way healthcare is provided to an aging country. The nation's hospitals are getting financially sicker. Hospitals and health systems facing staffing challenges prior to the pandemic, but the issue was exacerbated as employees became burnt out and left the sector by the thousands. As a result, hospitals began relying more on costly contract labor, which drove up their expenses. This is just one of the issues contributing to a challenging financial environment for health systems. The rising costs of drugs and other supplies have also put pressure on hospitals, leading an estimated two-thirds throughout the U.S. to operate at a loss in 2022, including WakeMed Health and Hospitals. When people cost you more, which is your number one expense, and then supplies and drugs and equipment cost you more, but you're not able to increase what you get paid at the same rate, it creates a real challenge, WakeMed CEO Donald Ginzig says. Compounding the rising costs is the lack of options to generate more revenue. Much of the patient revenue that hospitals such as WakeMed generate comes from government payer sources like Medicare and Medicaid, so reimbursement rates are set by the federal government. And on the commercial side, hospitals have to wait until the end of multi-year contracts with insurers before trying to negotiate higher rates. These financial pressures contributed to WakeMed experiencing an operating loss of $107.5 million in fiscal year 2022. The year before, the health system had an income from operations of about $47.4 million, according to an audited financial statement. WakeMed is not alone, as both Duke Health and ECU Health registered losses and a complete 180 when compared to last year's finances. UNC Health managed to avoid negative margins, but the health system's operating income of less than 1% is below the mark of previous years. In 2019, for instance, UNC Health had an operating margin of 6.4%. It's all part of a national picture where even hospitals in thriving markets such as the Triangle are scrambling to deal with rising costs and shrinking profits in a world that feels permanently altered after the pandemic. WakeMed avoided closing facilities or making other dramatic operational changes by dipping into its reserves and finding ways to mitigate costs, Ginzig says. But despite some improvements in its labor situation, the financial numbers this year are in line with the previous fiscal year. We're never going to go back to pre-COVID costs, Ginzig says. Salaries aren't going to go down and supplies aren't going to cost less. So now health systems are evaluating how to operate in an environment where everything is more expensive, labor is harder to find, and patients are seeking different ways of accessing care. People don't want to pay more for health care, Ginzig says. So how do you balance those things out while still staying true to the fact that we've got to deliver health care to those who have injury, sickness, or illness? And balance that with how we leverage our ability to help prevent the majority of what we care for today, tomorrow. Financial challenges. January 2022 kicked off a period of 15 consecutive months in which median operating margins for hospitals nationwide were negative, according to data from the software company Syntellis Performance Solutions. While multiple factors contributed, a dramatic increase in labor costs is the main driver, says Steve Wasson, general manager of data and intelligence solutions at Syntellis. About 100,000 registered nurses left the workforce during the pandemic, according to research from the National Council of State Boards of Nursing. These staffing shortages led hospitals to hire more costly contract labor to fill positions. As a result, nursing labor expenses per patient day in April 2023 were up 17.6% compared to 2 years prior, according to data from Syntellis. And it's not just nurses. The U.S. is also grappling with a shortage of physicians, with the Association of American Medical Colleges projecting projecting that the country will be short about 124,000 physicians by 2034. In addition to the increase in costs, the workforce issues also affected revenue by limiting patient volumes, Wasson says. We saw that the demand was growing, but labor wasn't there, he says. They had to cancel elective procedures, which many times is one of the most profitable lines of business. These rising expenses, alongside a hit to revenue, created a cycle that hospitals are still facing. According to Syntellis, the nationwide median operating margin for hospitals finally turned positive in March at 0.4%, a rate that held flat in April. The American Hospital Association described the crushing financial challenges that health systems are facing in a letter to Congress last year that outlined policy proposals to bring some relief. But some researchers have raised questions about the root of these financial challenges. Experts from the Rand Corporation, Manhattan College, and Johns Hopkins University argued in a recent article in the journal Health Affairs that investment losses are the primary driver of nonprofit health systems' overall losses. Health systems, like other large organizations, invest heavily in stock markets, leading them to experience dramatic drops in investment income as stock prices plummeted last year. WakeMed, for example, reported a nearly $100.4 million loss in investment income in the fiscal year 2022, down from gains of roughly $98.5 million in 2021. In the article, the researchers, Christopher Whaley of Rand, Sabatin Demirkin of Manhattan, and G. Ba of Johns Hopkins, say that financial losses from investments make potential policy solutions less clear. When losses are driven by risky financial investments, which generated positive returns in many previous years and will do so in many future periods, it is not clear whether patients, employers, insurers, and taxpayers should be responsible for paying higher prices to offset the impact of overall market declines, the researchers write. The American Hospital Association pushed back on these claims, arguing that while investment income is down, rising expenses are the real driver of the negative operating margins that hospitals across the country have experienced. And health systems don't have a lot of levers to pull to try to raise revenue to offset these rising costs, says Mark Pascaris, a director at Fitch Ratings. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services sets the rates at which hospitals are paid for treating Medicare patients. Earlier this year, CMS announced it was considering a 2.8% increase to this amount, but this increase doesn't cover the rise in supply and labor costs that hospitals are experiencing, says William Bryant, chief financial officer of UNC Health. We're working to try and manage as efficiently and effectively as we can, but it creates that much more of a pinch to do more with less, he says. Hospitals' response. A typical hospital that Fitch rates may generate more than 50% of its gross revenue from government payer sources, such as Medicare and Medicaid, Pascaris says. Health systems can try to renegotiate rates with commercial payers, but to begin these conversations, hospitals must first see out existing multi-year contracts. UNC Health is in the middle of these types of discussions, which Bryant described as mixed, with insurers not fully willing to accept the need to increase payments, he says, to offset some of the increases in expenses that UNC Health has experienced. We're looking to them to acknowledge and work with us to get our reimbursement levels to something that's more sustainable, Bryant says, because I don't think we can endure another 3 to 5 year period like the last 3 to 5 year period. These negotiations can be difficult, as seen when WakeMed and UnitedHealthcare failed to reach a deal on a new contract by June 2022, affecting thousands of patients. At the time, the insurer claimed that WakeMed proposed a 20% increase in prices, which UnitedHealthcare said would have led to higher premiums for patients. The two sides found a resolution and signed a 3-year contract in November. While not speaking to the UnitedHealthcare situation specifically, Ginsig says WakeMed is in discussions with insurers and pharmaceutical companies as drug prices continue to increase. It is both collaborative and tension-driven as you sit down and try to work through those aspects, Ginsig says. In response to how it's handling contract discussions with health systems, Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina says that it's focused on keeping premiums as affordable as possible. Inflation is not new to healthcare, an industry in which costs have risen for decades, Blue Cross NC says. It's important to remember that any cost increases to medical services have a direct impact on our customers' out-of-pocket costs. While negotiating new rates is one of the primary ways hospitals can raise revenue, some are also taking significant steps to lower expenses. Duke Health, for instance, recently eliminated nearly 300 positions, to right-size and realign the structure of some of its administrative and operational functions, officials with the health system said in a statement. Many of those cuts are coming through retirements and closures of vacant positions. The system declines to disclose the positions that are affected. This restructuring followed three executives at Duke Regional Hospital in Durham stepping down after a review of the hospital's performance. This included the former chief financial officer, Jonathan Hoy, chief nursing officer, Vicky Orto, and chief operating officer, Mitch Babb. Duke Health declines to comment on its financial challenges. The health system's most recent audited financial statements show a roughly $13.5 million operating loss for the year that ended June 2022, down from its operating income of about $120.7 million the previous year. ECU Health has also implemented operational changes to make up for its financial losses. The health system earlier this year disclosed its plans to close five regional ambulatory clinics in rural areas of eastern North Carolina. The health system also is discontinuing its operation of an inpatient behavioral health unit at a hospital in Roanoke Rapids. At the time, ECU Health said it had a $46 million operating loss during the fiscal year that ended in September. Closing the five clinics allowed ECU Health to consolidate duplicated services into one location, says Andy Zukowski, chief financial officer of ECU Health. The decision is part of the health system's efforts to evaluate how it delivers care in a large rural area with a dispersed population while trying to lower costs. It came down to how do we take providers and team members from two locations and bring them into one location and enhance the quality of service to the patient, Zukowski says. ECU Health is projecting another loss this year, but the situation has improved, says Zukowski, who described the system's pre-pandemic margins as nominal. As a rural health system, Medicare and Medicaid payments make up a larger share of its payer mix compared to those in more urban areas. According to a financial statement, the health system, plus numerous affiliates that make up a combined group, had an operating loss of about $51.8 million for the six-month period that ran through the end of March. This compared to an operating loss of $24.7 million for the same time period last year. UNC Health has not made significant cuts to operations, but the health system is reviewing the services it offers at its facilities throughout the state, many of which are in rural areas, and will make adjustments as needed, Bryant says. It would be irresponsible for us not to do that, Bryant says. But we have in the past, and we will continue to certainly do everything within our power to manage without having to do mass layoffs or anything like that. Hospitals and health systems throughout the state, especially those in rural areas, are evaluating these types of decisions. On average, hospitals throughout North Carolina operated last year at about a 3% loss, says Steve Lawler, president of the North Carolina Healthcare Association. The situation is beginning to improve, with some hospitals nearing a break-even point. But despite relief from some short-term challenges, Lawler says that the healthcare sector will not return to its pre-COVID form. Everyone has embraced this idea that things are never going to be the same, Lawler says. But let's use this as an opportunity to think differently and be better. Fundamental changes. Part of the response is being driven through legislative efforts, both nationally and in the General Assembly. State lawmakers this year passed legislation to expand Medicaid access to hundreds of thousands of residents, which would provide some relief to hospitals by reducing the number of uninsured patients they treat, although the state's health systems pushed back on initial legislative proposals that included significant changes to the way healthcare facilities are developed in North Carolina. Additionally, the state's healthcare systems have pushed lawmakers to pass legislation that implements the Healthcare Access and Stabilization Program, or HASP. This would provide additional federal funding to hospitals that treat Medicaid patients, Lawler says. The financial assistance available to hospitals through HASP is significant, with these funds being the difference between UNC Health budgeting for a 2% operating margin next year or just breaking even. Both have been signed by Governor Roy Cooper, although they won't take effect until after a state budget is passed. If it were to pass, that will bring incremental revenue and health care for those patients, Bryant says. If that program doesn't come to fruition, then that would put us at a break-even level. Prior to the financial challenges brought on by COVID-19, most health systems in North Carolina enjoyed years of high-level financial performances. Duke Health, for instance, reported operating income ranging between $120 million to $285 million from fiscal year 2018 through fiscal year 2021. But the path to returning to pre-pandemic cash flow margins isn't straightforward. It could require fundamental changes in how healthcare is delivered to patients, says Pescaris with Fitch Ratings. When we speak with the health systems that we rate, there's a lot of talk about the need to redesign the delivery of healthcare, Pescara says. That suggests to me that the people who are in the business of running our hospital systems, they view this as the need for a long-term fix. While these financial challenges will lead to changes in healthcare, it's less clear how this will impact merger and acquisition activity between large health systems. The industry has seen an uptick in out-of-market mergers, meaning deals involving health systems in different geographical areas, like the one between Advocate Aurora Health and Atrium Health of Charlotte, says Kevin Hollerin, a senior director at Fitch Ratings. We're watching to see how those out-of-market mergers are going to work, he says. Is that the new norm? While the Triangle hasn't seen deals like the one involving Atrium, the area could see more activity in the future, pending the outcome of legislation in the General Assembly. Lawmakers are considering a measure that would provide UNC Health and ECU Health with protection from antitrust laws to enable them to engage in deals that are intended to make healthcare more accessible in North Carolina. The Federal Trade Commission recently sent a letter to lawmakers pushing back on the proposal, arguing that consolidation drives up the cost and lowers the quality of care. Aside from mergers, further changes are also on the way. Health systems are evaluating how labor is deployed within facilities compared to the use of virtual nurses for telehealth. The adoption of other types of technology may also play a role, including the use of generative artificial intelligence for certain communications with patients. UNC Health is an early adopter of such technology through a partnership with the software company Epic. Health systems are also evaluating how and where they treat patients. Even prior to the pandemic, outpatient volumes were increasing faster than inpatient volumes, meaning more patients are seeking care outside of a hospital. For instance, while UNC Health has plans for more acute care beds in the Triangle, it's also building a medical office campus in Chapel Hill along US 15501 near Interstate 40. The health system plans to build out more than 1 million square feet of medical office space on the property to move outpatient services out of the UNC Medical Center and centralize services at the new campus. I think you'll see us continue to make significant investments and probably even accelerating in more investments in community-based assets as we go forward, Bryant says. Taking care of patients inside hospitals is also more expensive for health systems, so there is an incentive to treat patients in other settings. More broadly, as payment models transition from fee-for-service to value-based care, hospitals and health systems could put more resources toward preventing people from needing acute-level care at the hospital. This focus on the prevention side could go a long way in addressing the country's fundamental issue of spending too much on the overall healthcare delivery system, WakeMed's Ginzik says. If you can keep one patient from becoming insulin dependent, we save hundreds of thousands of dollars, he says. That's how you're really going to start to swing the pendulum from the amount we as a nation spend on the care piece to more on the prevention piece. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. NC, still best for business. North Carolina has maintained its elite standing as the best state in the country for business in a closely watched ranking. The Tar Heel State is on top for a second consecutive year in America's Top States for Business by CNBC. North Carolina ranked number one for the first time ever last year. The Business and Financial Network says the state has a world-class workforce and a booming economy. North Carolina's performance improved over last year, according to the report, which notes Wolfspeed's plans for a $5 billion semiconductor factory in Chatham County, and Apple filing site plans for its $1 billion campus in the famed Research Triangle Park. That's in quotes, famed Research Triangle Park, the tech giant's first East Coast hub. North Carolina ranks first in the crucial workforce category, a big leap from number 12 a year ago. It also made significant gains in cost of doing business, education, and business friendliness, but its economy ranking dropped from first to third. The state is in the middle of the pack for cost of living, dropping from 22nd to 27th, a sign that affordability will be a challenge as more people and businesses move to the state. Rankings such as this one are often used by recruiters to build momentum and attracting more investments and jobs. An area that poses a threat to the state's standing is North Carolina's worsening political climate. For example, CNBC considered reproductive rights among the metrics for scoring on life, health, and inclusion, and Republican lawmakers passing of abortion restrictions, overriding Governor Roy Cooper's veto, hurt the state in that area. Durham firm expanding through partnership. A fast-growing clinical research organization based in Durham is expanding through a partnership with a public health care technology company. Velocity Clinical Research is opening clinical research sites within the practice network of Privia Health, a physician enablement company. Through a recent formed partnership, Privia, through its technology platform, works with more than 3,700 providers. Velocity will staff and operate joint research sites within existing Privia practice locations, with the first site opening within a clinic in Texas. The deal gives Velocity access to a large network of multi-specialty providers, enabling the company to move into different therapeutic areas. The deal extends a growth trajectory for Velocity that accelerated after the private equity firm GHO Capital acquired the company in 2021. Velocity at the time operated 14 sites and has since grown to 80, including locations both in the U.S. and in Europe, and more than 220 clinical research investigators. Changes afoot for Lake Boone Retail. A busy shopping center in Raleigh is seeing big changes. The Lake Boone Shopping Center, tucked just outside the Beltline, is gaining two new tenants and losing another. The Walgreens, located at 2462 Wycliffe Road, permanently closed on June 29, according to a sign on the store's door. The pharmacy was in one of the larger tenant spaces between Village Deli and Grill and Unleashed Pet Store. Also inside the retail center, a new outparcel is being constructed. The development is replacing a small office building that housed tenants including Kilpatrick Goodman and Point Realty Group. The new outparcel will hold the first Raleigh location of Chicken Salad Chick, a fast casual chain based in Alabama. The Butcher's Market, a Raleigh-based shop, will be opening its third Raleigh location in the outparcel. The shopping center sees heavy traffic on weekdays at lunchtime with tenants including Chubby's Tacos, Village Deli, Chick-fil-A, McDonald's, and Sushi Thai. The center is anchored by a Food Lion. RDU to Paris flight gets a makeover. The Delta Airlines nonstop flight to Paris out of Raleigh-Durham International Airport is coming to an end, but it's not the end of the service at RDU. Air France, a Delta partner, is launching a new route between Paris and RDU this fall via a Boeing 787-9 Dreamliner aircraft. The flights are set to launch at the end of October and will run three times a week. The flight will be RDU's first regularly scheduled Boeing 787 service, and that means a capacity increase for the route. Delta currently uses a Boeing 767 for the flight. According to Delta, there will be no overlap between the two airline services. They'll take over for us in a clean transition, said spokesperson Drake Castaneda. The Air France flights start October 30, while the first flight from Paris, to RDU. Miller gets new national role. The leader of the Triangle chapter of the American Heart Association is stepping down from her post and stepping into a new national role. Ann Miller, executive director of the Triangle in Eastern North Carolina, will transition in mid-September to be the part-time role of senior marketing manager of stewardship on the AHA's mission advancement team. The announcement of Miller's decision was made in a letter to the board. Miller has served as leader of the Triangle market for AHA for nearly 8 years. The coverage area expanded in 2021 to include eastern North Carolina. During her tenure as market leader, she has helped raise more than $31 million across the area. Miller has been at AHA for 15 years initially as an administrative assistant in its Chicago office. And finally, direct rental rates reach peak. Direct rental rates hit their highest point yet in Raleigh, reaching $32.29 per square foot, according to JLL's second quarter office report. This is a 1.9% increase from the first quarter 2023. Rates for sublease space also increased, now at $24.18 per square foot, a 2.5% increase from the previous quarter. Tenants are signing leases for shorter terms with older and Class B office spaces while they wait out construction on new Class A projects, according to JLL. And now we turn to the top news stories in the Triangle Business Journal. The first one written by Laura Bromet. Marriott Hotel and RTP to be released to lender after loan default. One of the Triangle's largest hotels is set to be returned to a lender after its owner chose not to pay down a maturing loan. The Marriott Raleigh-Durham Research Triangle Park is one of 19 hotels chosen by a major real estate investor focused on the hotel industry. The hotel is located at 4700 Guardian Drive in Durham and has 223 rooms, making it the 12th largest hotel in the Triangle. The hotel is owned by Ashford Hospitality Trust, a real estate investment trust based in Dallas that invests predominantly in upscale full-service hotels. The firm has announced plans to return 19 of its properties back to lenders after they failed debt yield tests, a common way of measuring risk associated with commercial real estate loans. Ashford Hospitality purchased the Marriott RTP Hotel in 2006 for $28 million. The hotel opened in 1988. The property also includes 7 meeting rooms, a deli, a sports lounge, a pool, and a restaurant. The company had a total of 34 properties nationwide across 6 loan pools with an initial maturity date in June. All 34 hotels had an extension debt yield test to determine if a one-year extension would be granted. None of the loan pools achieved the required debt yield test, determined by taking a property's net operating income and dividing it by the total loan amount. Ashford Hospitality Trust had the option to pay down the loans by the required amount. The firm decided to make the payments for 3 of the loan pools, containing 15 properties with payments totaling $129 million. The company decided not to make the payments for the remaining 3 loan pools, one of which includes the Marriott RTP Hotel. The required payment for the remaining pools would have totaled $255 million, according to the company. At this time, it appears that the most likely outcome will be a consensual transfer of these hotels to the respective lenders, Ashford Hospitality stated in a press release. The company did not respond to a request for comment. Location was one of the reasons given by the company for defaulting on the selected properties. And our next article is written by Ben Tobin. The headline, Governor's Village to see $12 million expansion. The Commons at Governor's Village will take 2 to 3 years. A big upgrade is coming soon to a master planned community in Chatham County. Governor's Village, which features homes and commerce across more than 450 acres along Mount Carmel Church Road, less than 10 minutes south of downtown Chapel Hill, is getting 4 additional buildings for commercial use, according to Chris Ehrenfeld, owner of Bold Construction. The buildings will range from 7,000 square feet to 14,000 square feet, according to Ehrenfeld. They will start going vertical in the fall, and at least one of the buildings will be completed by mid to late 2024, he says. Ehrenfeld says he is looking at a variety of tenants to lease the new buildings. We're in talks with a number of tenants, retail, medical, and services, he says. The project, called the Commons at Governor's Village, will take 2 to 3 years, per Ehrenfeld. He says estimated construction costs will be in the range of $12 million to $15 million. Governor's Village has been a busy spot for development for decades. The community is an amalgamation of hundreds of homes, apartments, parks, and businesses. It's across the street from the Governor's Club Master Plan community. This new project joins a slew of others coming to eastern Chatham County, an area roughly 40 miles west of Raleigh, that is teeming with development as the Triangle's growth spreads outward into the outlying counties. Last year, the county landed 2 major manufacturing projects: Wolfspeed, a Durham-based semiconductor manufacturer that plans to bring more than 1,800 jobs to the area, and VinFast, a Vietnamese electric vehicle maker that plans to build a 7,500-job assembly plant. Wolfspeed is already building its plant outside Siler City. The new factory is expected to drive growth further west across Chatham. The county still has a lot more land it's trying to use to attract potential investors and developers. Triangle Business Journal reported earlier this month that a 444-acre tract on Cockman Road along U.S. 64 just west of Pittsburgh is listed for more than $13.3 million, and a megasite in the county still has 1,400 acres available. And now we turn to the reporter pages in the Triangle Business Journal, starting with Lauren Onosorge's page on startups and legal. Enios charts expansion to support new vehicle. The 4x4 Grenadier is expected to launch later this summer. British automaker Enios, that's spelled I-N-E-O-S, Automotive, has big plans for Raleigh, and they're about to come to fruition, says the executive tasked with building out its Triangle operation. Gray Clark, executive vice president for the firm's Americas operation, says the company is looking for a new regional headquarters space, one that can help it launch its new 4x4, the Grenadier, in the U.S. Big plans. The stakes are high for the Grenadier, a five-seat SUV initially launching with conventional combustion and diesel powertrains. We have one chance to do this, Clark says. There are no do-overs. We have one chance to do this right. Enios announced plans to house its North American commercial operations in Raleigh back in 2021, long before Vietnamese EV maker VinFast announced its plans for Chatham County. Enios told city officials it would create up to 25 jobs by the end of 2022 and launch the Grenadier 4x4 in summer of 2023. Fast forward to today, and Enios is still getting ready to launch in the U.S. with 15 local employees. The plan is to hire even more in the coming months. When the Grenadier starts to sell, anticipated to happen by the fourth quarter of this year, the company will need to increase its Raleigh bench, Clark says. Right now, the firm's Raleigh operation is at East End Market, but the plan is to scale up and outgrow the space. Clark says the hunt is already on for a long-term headquarters, potentially outside of Raleigh's city limits, though still in the Triangle. The search for a local headquarters is more difficult than I anticipated, he says. Clark is looking for a 25,000-square-foot space, a place where by 2025 he could house 50 employees across both the technical and commercial staff. Prosecutors question alleged plea deals. As prosecutors push to have Stephen Peters' latest attempt to get out of prison dismissed by a federal judge, they're also casting doubt on his claim that he nearly took plea deals that would have meant considerably less time behind bars. Peters, founder of the now-defunct Vision Quest, was convicted in 2019 of orchestrating a $15 million Ponzi scheme and sentenced to 40 years in prison. Peters told the court last month that if he had been able to accept offered plea deals, the sentence would have been 5 years. He claims that his attorney was unable to get the deals in writing and that they disappeared before he could plead guilty. In a filing July 5, prosecutors appear to question his recollection. The United States disputes Peters' allegations regarding the alleged plea agreement negotiations and is prepared to address those allegations if necessary, prosecutors wrote in their response. And finally, RTP Startup files for bankruptcy. 5 years after its inception, a nutrition startup in Research Triangle Park has filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy. Panaceutics Nutrition, part of the Launch Place portfolio, filed for bankruptcy protection on June 30. The bankruptcy filing, signed by CEO Staten Noel, shows the firm was pulling in roughly $147,000 year-to-date compared to $217,000 for the full year, 2022. But the debts became difficult to overcome without new capital. Noel added the newness of the personalized nutrition field created challenges as the sector is primarily driven by software and wearables, not the kind of products Panaceutics was pushing out. And in turning to Zach Ezone's page on healthcare and higher ed, the first headline, UNC to offer free tuition to some. Undergraduates may be eligible based on family income. UNC Chapel Hill has responded to a U.S. Supreme Court ruling that shook up its admissions policies. Free tuition for some students. Beginning with the 2024 incoming class, the university will provide free tuition and required fees for undergraduate students from North Carolina whose families make less than $80,000 a year. Chancellor Kevin Guskowitz said in a July 7 letter. The move follows a Supreme Court ruling that prohibits universities from considering race when making admissions decisions. UNC Chapel Hill will comply with the ruling, Guskowitz said, while the university looks to expand access in other ways. The base rate plus fees for in-state undergraduate students attending UNC is $8,751 for the 2023-24 academic year. The school had just under 20,000 undergraduate students to start the 2022-23 academic year. In addition to the tuition assistance, UNC says it's stepping up its efforts to connect with students in under-resourced communities. These moves are part of the university's efforts to ensure that students who are accepted into the university have the opportunity to enroll regardless of financial constraints, Guskowitz said. The Supreme Court, in a landmark decision, ruled on June 29th that colleges and universities are not able to consider a prospective student's racial background in the admissions process. Students for Fair Admissions, which sued both Harvard and UNC Chapel Hill, argued that considering an applicant's race discriminated against students of Asian descent who were less likely to be admitted than underrepresented groups such as Black and Hispanic students. Writing for the majority, Chief Justice John Roberts said that Harvard and UNC Chapel Hill's policies cannot be reconciled with the guarantees of the Equal Protection Clause, which is part of the 14th Amendment. UNC Chapel Hill's decision follows a similar move by Duke University. About a week before the court's decision, Duke announced that beginning this fall, it would provide full tuition for students from North and South Carolina whose household incomes are $150,000 or less. Durham Biopharma evaluating bankruptcy, liquidation. A small drug developer in Durham is evaluating its options, including bankruptcy, as it runs low on cash and a financier demands to get its money back. Asaragen disclosed that its leadership is considering liquidating and winding down the company in its latest quarterly earnings filings with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. The decision follows Asaragen terminating about 80% of its employees in April in an effort to reduce operating costs and preserve capital, with the company's cash balance totaling $2.1 million at the end of March. Following the layoffs, Asaragen, which previously had 26 full-time employees, stopped development efforts on two of its clinical programs. Unable to secure additional capital to support its operations, the company expects its resources will support operations into August. Asaragen launched in May 2021 with its acquisition of an investigational therapy for Farber disease from the biotech Enzyvant. Connected to this deal to acquire the therapy, Asaragen entered into a $35 million product financing agreement with Raleigh-based NovaQuest Capital Management. The funding was intended to support the development of the potential Farber disease treatment. However, after its workforce reduction, Asaragen stopped its efforts to move the program forward. And finally, Bree pays $15 million to Forward Drug Offerings. Bree Biosciences, and that's spelled B-R-I-I, a biotechnology firm in Durham, is paying a public company $15 million to expand its drug portfolio. Bree, with headquarters in the Triangle and China, has entered two licensing agreements with Massachusetts-based VBI Vaccines that expand Bree's focus on the hepatitis B virus. As part of the deals, Bree is paying VBI $15 million upfront, which includes an equity investment of about $3 million that's contingent on the achievement of near-term milestones, the company disclosed in a statement. Legacy starts Raleigh Lock and Leave Homes. New homes will list for around $2 million in Oberlin development. That's the headline on the first article on the On Real Estate page, written by Kaylee Thompson. Single-family homes with a listing price of around $2 million are coming to a new development in Raleigh's Oberlin community. Legacy Custom Homes, a Triangle home builder, has started construction on three new homes in its 22-home project within the Budley East development at the intersection of Oberlin and Fairview Roads. The two-story homes will have 4 to 5 bedrooms and range from 3,400 to 5,000 square feet. Some of the interior details will be quartz and marble countertops, 7 to 9 inch wide hardwood flooring, inset cabinets, and outdoor living areas. Each home will have a two-car garage and sit on 0.1 to 0.37 acre lots. Most of the homes will be custom builds. Elizabeth Cranville, a listing agent with Inside Real Estate, says work on the home started in May with a 9 to 12 month construction period for each home. Cranville says the home builder doesn't have a set completion date for all of the homes, but plans to start four more by the end of 2023. List prices aren't finalized yet, but Cranville says the homes will be most likely around $2 million. The home builder doesn't have a project cost estimate worked up yet, but funding will come via construction loans. The homes will be part of an HOA that will be a lock-and-leave neighborhood that includes landscaping and upkeep. The lots cover 3.77 acres and have a total assessed value of $5.5 million. Legacy Custom Homes owns seven of the lots so far, while an LLC addressed to Gordon Grubb and David Clancy currently owns the remaining lots. Budley East is a redevelopment of the Country Club Homes community led by Grubb Ventures, Williams Realty and Building Company, Clancy and Thays Construction Company, and Beacon Street Development. New townhomes near streets at South Point. A national home builder is advancing plans to build new townhomes in Durham after paying $6 million for land near the streets at South Point Mall. TriPoint Homes acquired 8.46 acres on Crescent Drive near Interstate 40 to develop 102 townhomes. The community is called Twin Leaf Towns, formerly referred to as Crescent Towns. The new homes will have at least three bedrooms and range from 2,100 to 2,300 square feet. Each home will be three stories and have two bay garages. The homes will start in the mid-400,000s. Amanda Hoyle, land acquisition director with TriPoint Homes, says the company will start construction in the fall and anticipates delivering the first units by early 2025. The company is self-financing the project. The parcels have a Chapel Hill address, but are located in Durham County and are annexed into the city of Durham. And finally, new apartments near shops, restaurants. A developer is planning to build apartments near shopping and restaurants in Southeast Cary. Woodfield Investments has filed a rezoning application with a preliminary development plan for a 330-unit multifamily project near the Tryon Village Shopping Center. The 9-acre property is zoned general commercial and residential 40, which only allows about one unit per acre. The proposed zoning is for a mixed-use district. The project would be a 5-story multifamily building with 1, 2, and 3-bedroom units that wraps a parking deck. And our last reporter page is written by Laura Brumette on retail and restaurants. Regents buys Park Terrace Shoppingplex. Built in 1988, the shopping center is about 25,000 square feet. A 35-year-old shopping center in a growing corridor of Durham is under new ownership. The Park Terrace retail strip, located at 2223 NC Highway 54, was recently sold for $4.6 million. The center is located in the southern part of Durham near Research Triangle Park. Regents LLC is the buyer, according to Durham County Property Records. Park Terrace Investments LLC is the seller. The entity is affiliated with Transmercial, a commercial real estate firm out of California. Transmercial purchased the property in 2006 for $3.25 million. Park Terrace is a 24,813-square-foot center built in 1988, according to property records. Tenants include Akashi Sushi, Vittles at the Park, Canisiera Mexicana, RTP Signs and Graphics, Toledo Butcher Shop, and Thai 55. The building sits on 2.6 acres. The property has a total assessed value of $2.93 million, according to property records. The deal was brokered by Marcus and Millichap. Andrew Margulies and Harrison Creason, investment specialists at the firm, listed the property on behalf of the seller and secured the buyer. Park Terrace is a well-located retail center near Interstate 40 and Research Triangle Park in Durham, Margulies says. The asset had challenges, but the dynamic job growth in RTP and potential for long-term upside at this location is undeniable. Our strategic marketing approach to qualified investors who target this type of asset yielded multiple offers and resulted in closing at 94% of list price. Regents LLC is registered to Elmer Doug Lucas and lists its address as 2820 Selwyn Avenue, Suite 627 in Charlotte. A press release by Marcus and Millichap lists the buyer as a private partnership based in Virginia. This property has been owned by the same landlord for 17 years, Margulies says. The buyer intends to implement a proactive management and leasing plan to streamline operations, increase the asset's net operating income, and increase the value over time. Park Terrace features 11 tenant suites and was 95% leased at the time of closing. Small retail centers that have opportunities for raising lease rates or making physical improvements to the property provide opportunities to increase the asset's value. Rise Biscuits coming to Cary's Waverly Place. Cary is getting another breakfast and lunch option with a new location plan for Rise Southern Biscuits and Righteous Chicken. The new Rise store is planned for 575 New Waverly Place inside Cary's Waverly Place Shopping Center. The Rise brand was founded in Durham in 2012 and now has 19 locations in 8 states and another 100 units in development. Rise is a franchise concept, but the Cary store will be corporate-owned. The company has submitted an application for a commercial building permit with the town of Cary. The application calls for new partitions, restroom, kitchen equipment, ceilings, lighting, finishes, and associated mechanical, plumbing, and electrical work. It is currently under review. The building permit application lists Gateway Building Company as the general contractor. And finally, Yelp honors Durham Vegan Restaurant. Yelp, a customer review platform, has named the top 100 restaurants in the Carolinas for 2023. Pure Soul, an all-vegan restaurant in Durham, took the number one spot. Pure Soul is located at 4125 Durham Chapel Hill Boulevard and is known for serving plant-based versions of soul food dishes. The Triangle had 10 total restaurants on the list. The company took into account reviews from January 1, 2021 through March 31, 2023. The Triangle restaurants on the list include Bombay Curry of Raleigh, number 11, A Place at the Table, number 18, M Sushi, number 19, Ideals Sandwich and Grocery, number 30, and St. Roque's Fine Oyster and Bar, number 36. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline: One word could change the future of startups. The U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission may inadvertently change the way fund managers invest in companies and other securities. The SEC is seeking to change a small word, essentially lowering the bar for indemnification of fund managers to ordinary negligence from gross negligence. It does not look like that big of a change, right? But a closer analysis of the potential pitfalls of such a change show it may fundamentally change the way venture capital firms, private equity players, and fund managers pick and invest in companies and securities. Under the gross negligence statute, fund investors or limited partners must show reckless behavior or a complete disregard for an obvious risk on the part of the general partner in making investments that ultimately resulted in heavy losses. To thwart such an environment of heavy risk-taking, SEC Chairman Gary Gensler has said in the past that the change in the wording is to prevent managers from engaging in a number of activities that are contrary to the public interest and the protection of investors. Gensler was talking about the change of the word and some other rules under the proposed Private Fund Advisors, or PFA, rule that was proposed by the agency more than a year ago. If fund managers and general partners are afraid of the liability threshold being lowered, there's every reason to believe it could have a chilling effect on high-risk, high ROI, return on investment, potential investments. And we do not have to look any further than the general partners of venture capital firms. VC investments by design are high-risk strategies. VC firms are lucky if one out of 10 investments they make turn into profit. More than half fail, and the others may require additional funding to stay alive until some relevant milestones are reached. So if a limited partner believes the general partner may not have done enough due diligence before investing in a startup, what could be a plausible solution to that? You guessed it, not take risks. The question still remains, how can fund managers indemnify from these kinds of liabilities? If the SEC proposal becomes an operational rule, there could be new insurance coverage available for funds to protect the managers from ordinary negligence. That would cost funds money and, in return, lower the internal rate of return for investors. SEC Chair Gensler has done a lot of good things within the agency to protect the everyday investor, but I'm not sure a change in the language to determine the indemnification bar is the right way to go. At minimum, investment managers, to protect themselves, may ask for additional documentation, financial disclosures, and product impact studies from potential recipients of VC funds and PE infusion. That will cost time and money on a process that may simply be designed to avoid litigation from institutional investors and limited partners. That's not the ecosystem we want in these times where everything is moving at warp speed. In private investing, there is an inherent risk associated with betting on companies and managers. That's the game. If the investment materializes, the returns are big. Frankly, the change could eventually hurt the fund itself. In theory, if there's an issue between the general partner and the limited partner, the fund itself will fund the settlement, damage fees, etc. As mentioned earlier, insurance companies probably may have to offer new indemnification clauses against such litigation and losses, but that too will come at a cost to the fund. Gensler and his team may want to study the impact further because the difference between gross and ordinary is not exactly ordinary. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we'll go through and read some of the big number sections that are throughout the journal. The first big number is 3,000. New data out of research firm PitchBook shows investors financed just over 3,000 startup funding deals in the second quarter in the U.S., about a third fewer than the same time period a year ago, and they spent less at about $39.8 billion, down nearly half from last year. $800 million. That's how much the Raleigh-based investment firm NovaQuest Capital Management aims to raise for its next biopharmaceutical fund. The firm had raised $90 million for the fund called NovaQuest Pharma Opportunities Fund 6 through two investors, according to a June 22 filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. And the next number is $24 million. That's how much the office building at 3515 Glenwood Avenue in Raleigh sold for to an LLC addressed to CGN Global, a global business performance consulting firm headquartered in Chicago. Pinnacle Financial Partners sold the property and is leasing it back. The building houses Triangle Business Journal, among other tenants. And our last number is $7.4 million. A hotel property off Glenwood Avenue in Raleigh has new owners and a new look. The former Extended Stay America Raleigh Crabtree Valley sold for $7.4 million in late June, according to Wake County deed records. The property was purchased by a group out of Charlotte that has a history of buying defunct hotels and reopening them. And now we'll read the quotes that are dispersed throughout the Triangle Business Journal in the He Said It or She Said It sections. The first quote is from Ann York, program director and professor of economics at Raleigh's Meredith College, said the pandemic took a lot of people out of the labor market, creating a shortage, and in the Triangle, that shortage means bankruptcy filings, such as that of Raleigh's Direct Marketing Group, whose attorney, Danny Bradford, blamed increasing employee costs as driving his client's Chapter 11 filing. You have a shortage of workers. You have to start paying them more. That's the story. Next, we have Fortrea CEO Tom Pike on the company's official launch on July 3 after LabCorp completed the spinoff of its clinical development business. Fortrea has been established to bring sharpened focus to our purpose, which is partnering with customers to bring life-changing therapies to patients faster. And next we have John Macquarie, Senior Vice President of North American Financial Institutions at DBRS Morningstar. Projected loss rates in the office sector continue to increase because of the high level of vacancies and projected further deterioration under the stress test scenario. And our last quote is from longtime Triangle restaurateur Georgios Bakatsias on his newest restaurant, Nikos. The restaurant opens July 19 in Durham's Brightleaf Square, where Bakatsias had a similar concept years ago. We're evolving our original concept in response to the neighborhood today, which has flourished and become very multicultural. And turning to news from around the state from the Triad Business Journal, Honda to keep new jet plant in Greensboro. Honda Aircraft has won a package of state incentives worth up to $3.9 million to keep it from going to Alabama to build its new, larger, light jet instead of in Greensboro, where the company is based. The North Carolina Economic Investment Committee approved the package on July 11. Honda Aircraft's appearance before the panel in Raleigh was the first public acknowledgement in North Carolina that the company was behind the codenamed Project Sage. The company's investment is expected to total $55.7 million and create 280 jobs through 2027. The average wage is to be a bit more than $88,000. State Economic Development staff told the EIC, a panel of leaders from key agencies involved in economic development, that Honda Aircraft had been offered $9.2 million to build the HondaJet 2600 in Albertville, Alabama, instead of Greensboro. Honda Aircraft now employs 723 full-time workers and also has 93 contract workers. And from the Charlotte Business Journal, we have a story written by Eric Spanberg, $215 million makeovers for Spectrum Center. Upgrades to the Charlotte Hornets Arena will go in phases. The City of Charlotte and the Charlotte Hornets are inching closer to upgrades and other improvements at the Spectrum Center, with the first round of financing expected to be approved in September. The required steps to issue debt for the taxpayer-funded arena overhaul are moving ahead. The City Council plans to send two financing items to public hearings in August, $110 million to pay for half the arena's improvements, as well as refinancing existing arena debt on more favorable terms. The city plans to borrow money in two portions or tranches for the arena upgrades. Last year, the council approved $215 million worth of renovations for the Spectrum Center, which opened in 2005, including additional entries, upgrades to back-of-house equipment, and new revenue-generating features, including dining and gathering areas and different seating options. The city's action in June 2022 was for a total of $275 million for the Hornets, $215 million for arena improvements to be repaid using a portion of existing tourism tax revenue, and $60 million for a standalone practice center to be funded through sponsorships that would accompany an arena district on Brevard Street near the arena. The latter scenario depends on the practice center being built as part of a proposed new Charlotte Transportation Center across the street from Spectrum Center. The city and the Hornets also have the option of building the training center behind the arena on a vacant lot, though the funding would have to change without the backstop of arena district sponsorships to sell. Malcolm Graham, head of the City Council's Economic Development Committee, says the initial arena work will be done in phases and focused on replacing worn-out roofing, drainage, and other structural and operating priority areas. Asked about the training center, Graham says the city and the Hornets need to discuss the previous plans and whether anything might change based on shifting circumstances. Most obviously, the Hornets are soon to have new majority owners. Gabe Plotkin and Rick Schnall are leading a controlling interest group that will replace Michael Jordan, while the Charlotte Area Transit System, the anchor of the proposed transportation center, is under new leadership and trying to dig out from months of controversy and missteps. And we'll go ahead and stop there as we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.